What's the difference? As long as people can understand most of it. Don't worry about the details. Just write down what we told you. It's the message that matters, not the delivery. What you screw up in punctuation, you'll make up for with substance and consistency. Besides, you might be surprised. Ask the Holy Spirit to help you, and you'll do fine.
Doesn't this contradict what you told me before about how I don't have to tell anybody anything if I don't want to? And how you're not going to tell me about the future and stuff?
No, we're not going to tell you much about the future, and you don't have to write anything if you don't want to. Even if you do, you won't have to appear in public if you don't feel comfortable about it. You don't like to speak in front of a crowd, do you?
I'd rather stick broken pieces of glass up my butt.
I don't think that will be necessary. But the point is, you're free to do whatever you choose. But you'll be wise not to do it alone. Let Jay or the Holy Spirit make your decisions for you whenever you have the time to ask. We have an advantage in talking about this because everything that's going to happen has already happened. It's not like we're giving you a special assignment. We're just telling you what's already occurred, and we'll get into that eventually.
I feel a little uncomfortable not telling Karen about this. Would she be able to see you two if she were here?
Sure. The bodies we project are just as dense as yours, although our brains aren't. Just kidding. But anybody would be able to see us the same as they can see you. You may be doing Karen a favor by not telling her about us for a while, though.
How's that?
Well, if you tell her about us now and she believes you, which she would, then it would alter her life and induce a series of events that she doesn't need. It would be best for you to tell her later when our appearances are over. You're the only one we want involved right now.
Could I take pictures of you and record your voices?
You could, but I'll give you three reasons why not to. First, you'd be tempted to prove to people that we appeared to you. Yet any actors could have played us or our voices, so it wouldn't really prove anything. Second, this isn't about convincing anyone that you're right. It's about sharing ideas to help them along the path. Third, using our appearances as a means to induce anyone's belief in us wouldn't be in line with what we're teaching. We want to teach in a way that will induce the kind of practical application that leads to revelatory experience. That's what strengthens belief in a genuine way.
What if people reject what you have to say? Or they just use it for a while but then give up and move on to something else?
Those are likely responses, but some people will stick with it and make the most of it. As we said, don't worry about the details. No learning is ever wasted. Anything that you learn stays in your mind forever. You can't lose it. Even if you're not conscious of it, it's still there. That's why you shouldn't be overly concerned if you think you might not make it to heaven in this particular lifetime. Learning is not linear. Not only does everything stay in the mind, but you can rest assured that any seemingly linear decision about reincarnation is not made by the human body or brain. That decision is made by your mind on a completely different level, depending on whether or not you have done your necessary part in helping the Holy Spirit heal your unconscious guilt. As we said, no matter what appears to happen, your mind retains all information.
Cool. So none of us are as dumb as we look.
That's true. All ignorance is actually repression that exists in order to produce a particular effect for a specific reason, which we'll get into.
I've already said that the surviving copy of my gospel was changed over the years, but it still stands as a more realistic example of the kind of statements that were made by our leader. What I will affectionately refer to from now on as Thomas is a Jewish Christian saint's gospel that predated Gnosticism. Gnosticism was a combination of many earlier philosophies mixed in with some of the things Jay said or that people thought he said. Yes, you could certainly say that Jay had what might be described as Gnostic tendencies, but they were not all that new. Some of these traits go back to archaic form of Jewish mysticism. If you want to see some of the later Gnostic theology, you can always read the Valentinian Gospel of Truth, which is the finest of the Gnostic literature. You won't understand some of the terminology, but you'll get a general idea of what some of the Gnostic sects believed. Jay would even agree with some of it, most importantly that the world is very much like a dream and God did not create it. But the Gospel of Truth was written Over 150 years after the first version of my gospel, which lists some of the teachings that were actually spoken by the historical Jay. I say some of the teachings and call it the first version for the reasons I gave you earlier, but the implications of all this could not be more clear. The first service my gospel performs is that the world can finally see for itself that as Christianity became Christianity, it bore less and less of a resemblance to the historical Jay, our Messiah, wisdom teacher, and more and more of a resemblance to the made-up apocalyptic figure of the later gospel novels. The second important service is the general tone of the teachings themselves. Now, Jay was from the Middle East, not Mississippi. His approach was much more mindful and Eastern than the kind of running away from the mind, hardcore dualism of the West. These Western influences were brought in later. And the third service is in the meaning of some of the sayings themselves. I've already said that we didn't completely get Jay's message at that time. But Thomas does give a more authentic representation of the kinds of things Jay would say than in the other Gospels. I'll give you a sort of revised standard version of my own to help you understand some of it here. And please note that the sayings in Thomas are not in any special order. Also, I will choose only quotations that I actually heard Jay say. And for the purposes of this discussion, I'll only choose a few of them. Don't forget we have other, more important things to talk about. This is only meant to help to prepare you. Out of the 114 sayings in Thomas, Jay actually said 70 of them, or at least something reasonably close. The other 44 are spurious, a word the church was once fond of using to describe the entire gospel. The contributions of the scholars being what they are, the church doesn't talk as loud as it used to.
I'm sorry, but I'm bursting with one more question I have to ask.
Careful, kid. Too many interruptions, and we may have to cook up Dante's Inferno for you.
I've always heard about this mysterious hypothetical Q gospel that scholars believe was used as a source by all three of the so-called synoptic gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke. Supposedly, those three all copied from the same source, and I believe you used the word sources. Is your gospel this missing Q document?
Well, as we said, we didn't come here to attempt to make a contribution to biblical scholarship. Not that a scholar would listen to a source that can't be verified anyway. But if you must know, I'll tell you exactly what Q was. The Gospels of Matthew and Luke did indeed copy from it, but Mark didn't. The writer of Mark had his own sources. And Q was not my gospel, as scholars already know, but which you can be excused for not knowing.
What was it then?
After the crucifixion, Jay's brother James, often called James the Just, was Jay's heir apparent in the eyes of many of the followers. They knew how much Jay loved him, and James was a sincere and steady man. However, he was also very conservative. Now, conservative is not exactly the word you'd use to describe Jay, who was the radical of radicals, not in temperament, but in his teachings. For this reason, there were three of James' followers who, although they respected him, decided to preserve for posterity the teachings that they had personally heard Jay speak in public. They didn't necessarily have faith in James or any other group to stick to some of the startling principles that Jay had articulated. So they put together a sayings gospel titled, simply, Words of the Master. However, over the next 40 years, as the original recorders of words passed away, some distorted sayings that others, including John the Baptist, had spoken, and that some followers assumed that Jay believed or falsely thought he had spoken, made their way into words. The writers of two later mainstream church gospels used this document, which is now referred to as Q, after a German word that means source, to copy sayings from so they could combine them with their own stories. They also copied from Mark, the writer of which had used a consensus of sayings. The Gospel of John was written later, when the split between the newest sects and Judaism had become more obvious. Interestingly, several copies of Words of the Master, as well as Thomas, survived in various places for longer than you might think. It wasn't until around 400 AD that you had the new effort directed by St. Augustine to wipe out anything that didn't fit in with the church's official beliefs. His book burning would have made the Nazis proud, but it was done in the name of God, of course. Even the words of the Master and the Gospel of Thomas weren't Gnostic, they were destroyed right along with virtually all of the existing Gnostic literature. After all, some of the sayings didn't sound very much like the Church, so they must have been heretical. If it wasn't for the Nag Hammadi collection that was discovered buried near the river along with my Gospel, the world wouldn't have had much to go on as far as alternative glimpses of Jay are concerned. Now we'll proceed with Thomas. It begins. These are the hidden sayings that the living Jay spoke, and Didymus, Judas Thomas, recorded. 1. And he said, "Whoever discovers the interpretation of these sayings will not taste death." I'll use the numbers now, although my version didn't have numbers. And this saying was numbered 1 later because people weren't sure whether I had said it or Jay did. I was the one who said and wrote it, and it was supposed to be a part of this brief introduction, not labeled as a saying of Jay. The word hidden simply means that many of these sayings were spoken by Jay, either in private or to a very small group of people. It doesn't mean that it was his intention to hide things. One will not taste death because, as pointed out earlier, Jay was showing us the way to life, meaning that what we were experiencing here on earth was not life, even though we assumed it was. He was the living Jay because he had attained true enlightenment, his oneness with God. Living, in this case, does not refer to him being in a body, even though it appeared he was. It's a reference to the resurrection of the mind, as alluded to earlier, and also referred to a saying from my Gospel that I won't talk about until a later visit. Also, the word living here would have had nothing to do with the resurrected body, even though Jay did appear to us after the crucifixion. I want to give you a brief clarification now about names. For one thing, Jay's name was not really Jesus. His Hebrew name was Yeshua, although we seldom call him that. To us, he was the Master. Not that he wanted to be called the Master or anything else in particular, but because we were in awe of him at that time. The translation of his name to Greek and then English should have ended up as Yeshua, not Jesus, but it really doesn't matter. What's in a name, after all? Would not a Christ by any other name be as one?
If it doesn't really matter, then why do you call him Jay?